Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
What happened here? Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
An impressive, impressive win for the Boston Celtics tonight down at TD Garden. Welcome in to CLNS Radio's post-game coverage of tonight's game between the Boston Celtics and the Portland Trailblazers. It didn't look good at the start, but a swarming Celtics defense just shut down the Portland Trailblazers in their hot shooting from the first quarter to extend their home winning streak at the TD Garden to 12 with a victory tonight over the Blazers by a score of 116-93. I am your host tonight, Sean Backe. Joining me will be Corey Prescott as well. Don't forget to get in queue when we open up the SeatGeek toll-free call lines as well, 347-215-7771. I see that some of you have already gotten in queue, so we'll open up the call lines in a little while and let you talk about this one. But don't forget that CLNS Radio is presenting a brand new Celtics pregame show. So CLNS Radio's leading online coverage of the Boston Celtics is now even more comprehensive than ever. From the Celtics postgame show to the Garden Report and to Celtics Beat, CLNS Radio will now provide basketball fans game day coverage before anyone else leading up to tip-off. The all-new Boston Celtics pregame show with LHR will be released on clnsradio.com on game day at 4 p.m. Eastern, making it the first pregame show to air anywhere. Don't forget to download the CLNS Radio mobile app today so you don't miss a show. Corey Prescott, I'm going to bring you in now. You know, the Celtics, as I said earlier, 12-game home winning streak. This was an impressive win tonight for the Celtics. They really shut down the Blazers, who got off to a very hot start shooting tonight. At one point, with about 8 or 9 minutes left in the first quarter, they were shooting 75% in this game. Cooled off considerably after, but the Celtics defense deserves a lot of credit for being able to shut Portland down after that hot first quarter.
Yeah. Watching that first quarter, you kind of get the feeling that it's going to be a Damian Lillard and a CJ McCollum kind of game. They're really getting a lot of good movement going, a lot of backdoor cuts. Lillard had a shot on pretty nice in that first quarter, and it just seemed like it was going to be a down-to-the-wire game, sort of like we saw Monday night against Utah. But I think the game changer was Marcus Smart. He kind of came in, and he's always bringing that energy, but he was hitting his shot, getting towards the basket, really making it a pain for Lillard and McCollum, and I know Crabbe was out there as well. So yeah, again, a really impressive win. This is kind of what we envisioned when sites like 538 were predicting 50 wins for this team. Just pretty much an onslaught from up and down the roster.
Yeah, and you mentioned McCollum and Lillard, and of course, I mean, you can't help but be impressed by both of those, especially Damian Lillard. He ended up with 20 points tonight, but only 8 of 17 shooting for him. Most of that 8 were in the first half. In that first quarter, he cooled off considerably afterwards, and it has to do a lot with Marcus Smart and I think Avery Bradley shutting both of those guys down. McCollum started off hot as well, 17 points for him overall on 5 of 13 shooting. He hit his first 5 shots and then missed his next 8, and that was it for him. He was done. So the Celtics, with especially coming off that victory in Utah on Monday, and I happened to be at the game, Corey, so I experienced what it was like to be in the building. It was playoff atmosphere. I imagine it was much like that tonight, although, you know, towards the end there, the third quarter, the fourth quarter, it was kind of a blowout, and so it wasn't as heightened as it was Monday night. But when Geno time comes out, It's always a lot of fun in the TD Garden. And, you know, this is an impressive victory for them because, you know, Portland is no slouch. And with the talent they have on this team, you know, we mentioned a couple of the guys, you know, obviously Damian Lillard kind of leads the pack for them. You know, even losing a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge, they've been able to hang tight out there in a very tough Western Conference. And they're coming off a six-game winning streak themselves going into this game, but they also played four games in five nights. So, you know, obviously they, you know, they had a lot of adrenaline going in the first quarter, and they, you know, their legs just weren't there the rest of the game. And you could see that right after the first quarter when they were shooting so well, they just, their legs came out from under them and they weren't able to hit the shots that they were hitting in the first quarter. How much merit do you give to that? That you know, that Portland's played so many games, they're on an East Coast road trip, four games in five nights, that they just kind of ran out of gas after that hot first quarter.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely has to play a part in it. Traveling west to east and then playing the prior night in New York City, that certainly has to. But for anyone who hasn't watched Damian Lillard this year, I mean, for all the notoriety that Steph Curry gets, which is obviously well-deserved, Damian Lillard is doing a lot of those similar things. He's second in the NBA in pull-up threes as far as an efficiency and making those three-point shots. So he's doing everything for this team. Definitely overachieving. Sort of remind me of a Celtics team that the sum is bigger than the parts. But again, yeah, playing last night in New York, they played Sunday at Indiana, and then they played last Saturday at Chicago. And that Indiana game, I saw highlights of that. I think that was a grinded out victory that they had to use all their will.
Yeah, well, the Celtics, they instilled their will on the Blazers after this one, end up with a 116-93 victory over over Portland tonight. Some highlights from you know, high scores from the Celtics. You mentioned Marcus Smart and obviously what he did out there tonight. You know, he ended up with 15 points and also 11 rebounds for Marcus Smart tonight. I think that's a huge stat for him. Isaiah Thomas led all scorers with 30 on 11 of 20 shooting. And Mike Gorman had mentioned that that he hadn't been, you know, hitting his shot too much. And, you know, he was kind of off his game, especially in the first half a little bit on Monday night. With the sore wrist a little bit, but I thought he really turned it on. And obviously, when he's penetrating and hitting some outside shots, the Celtics are gonna be doing well. Talk about Isaiah Thomas and what he was able to do out there tonight to lead the Celtics. Really, you know, from that second quarter on, he was on his game to 30 points tonight.
Yeah, coincidentally enough, he was going against Lillard, who was actually stumped from the All-Star game. Thomas made it in pretty much off that last weekend, going up against John Wall head-to-head. But Isaiah was really just – he was aggressive from the get-go, going towards the rim, challenging some of the Trailblazer big men and the guards. Because Lillard, he's not a plus defender at all. He's actually that's probably his biggest weakness in this game right now is his defense. And, yeah, Isaiah Thomas, I can't believe this, but – he's using his right hand a lot more often now. It's amazing. I don't think I've seen it this year, him going to his right hand with those scoop shots and those, you know, changing hands midair. If he can add his other hand, his off hand to his game, he's going to be an even more deadly scorer than he is right now. 30 points and basically, I'll give him 29-47 because that's what it has in the box score. So
yeah,
more points per minute tonight is very impressive.
It is. And actually, Jared Weiss tweeted this out earlier, and Jared will be calling in from the TD Garden with the Grand State Locker Room Report a little bit later in the show. But he tweeted out earlier that using the right hand is one thing that that Thomas has noted that he needs to work on. So clearly he's doing that. You know, you saw it out there tonight that it looks like it's been working. So, you know, that was huge for the Celtics tonight. And, you know, the thing that I love about this team is that, okay, although Isaiah Thomas for the most part has been the high scorer in a lot of the games, you look at Monday night where Crowder really took over and led the team in scoring, had 22, I believe it was, hit a big three at the end of the game that had the crowd just raucous. So they're getting contributions every single night. And we'll get into a little bit more of some of the other contributions that the Celtics had tonight with their 116-93 victory over the Blazers. But don't forget that today's postgame show is powered by Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. Audiobooks are great to listen to when you're driving or running errands in the gym or just simply at home relaxing. So for our audience members, Audible is offering a free 30-day trial. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and browse over 180,000 audio programs. You can download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. So one audiobook you should definitely consider, and I personally downloaded this one myself, our frequent CLNS radio guest and sports beat legend Bob Ryan and his book Scribe. You can get a 30-day free trial at audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and download Scribe, narrated by Bob Ryan himself. So again, all you need to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and start your free trial today. Now, Corey, I don't know if you've read that book, but if you haven't, I highly recommend it. Obviously, you can get it for free on audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. But yeah, if you haven't, it's awesome. I downloaded it and listened to it, you know, on my way to and from work for a few days there, and just a great recollection of his career and his life, becoming the sports beat legend that he is.
Yeah, no, actually, I have it in paperback. Maybe I should download the Audible so I can actually listen to it instead of just looking at it on my mantle.
No, Bob Ryan narrating it is perfect. You know, obviously, there's some other audiobooks on Audible where they have somebody else, you know, read the book to you, if you will. But this one is Bob Ryan himself, so I think it adds a little bit to it. So definitely check out audiblepodcast.com/Celtics if you'd like to check that out as well. But like I said, there's over 180,000 downloadable titles. So, you know, I read Pedro's book on there, Pedro Martinez's book. You know, pretty much anything that you're interested in, there's going to be one for you there. We're going to be going to the SeatGeek call lines in a little while here. I see a couple people queued up already, so we'll get to you in a minute. But don't forget to follow CLNS Radio on Twitter, at CLNS Radio, and also on Facebook, facebook.com/CLNSFans. And as I mentioned, download the CLNS Radio free mobile podcast app for iOS and Android. Simply search CLNS Radio in your app marketplace. So, Corey, as I was alluding to before, you know, before the paying some bills there, I give a lot of props to Jared Sullinger tonight for how he played. You know, as much as we criticize Sully for, you know, sort of the lapses, if you will, that he has, the inconsistencies, he's becoming more consistent recently. And I think tonight was a good, you know, a good example of that. 15 points, 11 rebounds for Sully, played 24 minutes, 6-10 shooting. You know, he was making some big plays out there. You know, had the hook shot going, you know, had the low post moves. You know, he didn't shoot a three tonight that I saw. I don't know if I missed it, but I didn't see him shoot a three tonight, so that's always good. But he hit a couple of big shots, even from outside as well, inside the three-point line. What are your thoughts on Sullinger? I mean, you know, obviously he's been kind of a polarizing figure with the Celtics, and, you know, obviously there's been the talk of moving him at some point, maybe not recently, but, you know, over the last couple of years, obviously with his injuries and not being able to stay on the court. But what are your thoughts on Sullinger and you know, obviously how he played tonight, but your feelings overall on him?
Yeah, no, they've changed a lot, actually, pretty drastically. He came into the league with back issues. He always had the IQ for the game. We didn't really see that until the second season, but then the conditioning started to get a little bit worse. Obviously, last year was a major disappointment with the team basically just calling him out flat out, just saying, you're not in shape, and if you don't get into shape, you're not going to be in this team, and you're not going to be in the league any longer. The weight issue still appears to be there. It's probably gotten a little bit better, but it still appears to be there. His talent has never been in doubt, and he's really starting to display that. He had a nice matchup tonight going against Noah Vonleh, who just he's still really just learning the game. He came in the league last year, fresh out of college, one year in Indiana. So I had a nice matchup there. Al-Farouq Aminu is a small ball power forward, which Sully can bully guys twice his size down low. So playing a guy like that, he had his way down low and he had the moves going tonight. And he's always going to be a great rebounder in this league, no matter what. It basically comes down to the conditioning and whether he can improve upon that. Because even tonight, you saw him. He played 23 minutes. I don't think his season average is above 28. I can look that up, actually. But it's not really a starter's level minutes. He's going to be a restricted free agent. So if the team finds a team-friendly deal to land him on, I guess they'd go through with it. But I don't invest too much in a guy that could be an injury risk or a health risk going down the road.
Yeah, you mentioned Noah Vonley, obviously a kid from Haverhill, and they have Pat Connaughton on their team as well, who's a St. John's Prep kid. So a couple local kids playing for the Blazers out there. I'm sure it was exciting for them to play in the Garden. I'm not sure if Vonley played. I know he was with Charlotte last year, I believe. I don't remember if he played in the Garden or not. I
don't
obviously
remember
imagine
hearing
he did.
His name mentioned. No.
Yeah, no. So, obviously for a couple of local kids to play games in the Garden must be something for them. But, I was really impressed with the Celtics overall tonight. We can get into that a little bit more. But I do want to open up the SeatGeek call lines because we've got a couple people that have been waiting very patiently. So we're going to bring them on and get their thoughts on tonight's game as well. So we'll go right to the SeatGeek toll-free call lines. 347-215-7771. We have Nick Sacento from down in Tampa. First up on the CLNS Radio Celtics post-game show. What's going on, Nick? What do you got for us tonight?
Sean, Corey, how y'all doing tonight?
Fantastic. Hey,
good, man. How you doing?
Excellent. Fantastic. Great win tonight. I think this was probably as big a statement win as we've had all season for different reasons because considering how hot Portland was coming into the game. I think they had a record of, I saw one of those, those little stats fly across my timeline on Facebook, something like the second best record in the league since January 23rd. They were like 13-2, and I think after last night against the Knicks, they were 14-2, second only to Golden State, which was 13-1, and guess who that one was, that one loss Golden State had was against Portland. So we pretty much knocked off one of the, the hottest teams in the league tonight, and that granted all the things that were mentioned, that they may have, not had the legs, to keep it up in the second half for whatever reason. I mean, whatever reason there is, when you beat a team and you beat a team this on that good of a roll with that much momentum by that much, of a score, by that big of a difference, when you blow them out, when you get Geno time, and on top of that, add to, 12 game winning streak at home for the Celtics. I mean, it's just incredible. And to jump off what you guys were saying in terms of the game, it was definitely a Jared Sellinger and Marcus Smart game. It's funny because I'm sitting here looking at their stats and I'm putting them together because I was like, who really stood out to me? Because there are a bunch of players, obviously Isaiah Thomas, 30 points, incredible. I mean, he's going to give you, that almost every night. If he doesn't score, in the teens every night, then there's something wrong. It's almost a given that you're going to get, at least 17 or 18 out of Isaiah. But
I'm looking for 20 from him for every night. He should be
every night, at least 20. He should be getting 20. That's his average. It's 21 something, I think, every night. But I mean, averages can be deceiving. Like tonight, he had 30. There's going to be a couple of nights where maybe like I think a couple of games ago, he had like 17 or something like that. He didn't really go off for that much. But you can have games like that when you have players like. It's like Crowder didn't have a particularly good night. 4-for-12 shooting, 12 points. Evan Turner, my favorite, obviously had the most wretched shooting that reminded us of like his playing days with Indiana, like just the worst game that I think he's probably had as a Celtic in a long time, but still contributed in other ways. But you can do that when you have guys like Marcus Smart and Jared Sellinger, whose stat lines are almost identical, 15, 11, and 3. 15 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 assists for each of them. Sully, though, had 2 blocks. Marcus Smart had his 2 steals, but Sully had 2 blocks, and I think this is the second game in a row now that Sully has had multiple blocks in a game.
Mm-hmm.
If Sully can keep, you know, and he's not gonna be that defender where you're, you know, changing shots because he's there, but he's one of those guys like Kelly Olynyk. You wouldn't expect him to be one of the, you know, according to the advanced analytics, one of the top defensive guys, but he's in position, he's never out of position, and he knows how to use that size. As bad as we may criticize him for looking out of shape or being out of shape or whatever it is, his minutes may be limited a little bit because of, you know, conditioning, who knows, but he knows how to use his assets, whatever it is that he has, his assets,
to put it.
So to speak. He knows
perfectly
how to use
to
that
it.
To his advantage. And Marcus
yeah,
Smart
and
as well.
Sully has some pretty timely blocks as well. Like I said, Nick, I was at the game Monday night and ended up with a pretty good seat. So he has a pretty timely block. So he's not going to blow you away with, you know, with huge block numbers like we've seen from like a Hassan Whiteside or something like that. But when they come, they're important. He's been doing the job recently. And I said that earlier. He's been much more consistent.
He does his job. And I know you guys got other callers, but I just wanted to point out a couple things. This game, as much as it was about any individual player, was about fundamentals. When you only give up 5 turnovers in an entire game, you know what
yeah.
I mean, to the other team while you force, I think, what was it, like 14 or something like that, you're going to win a lot of games. If you hit 23 of your 24 free throws, you're going to win a lot of games. And that's why people, I know that, you know, the three-point thing is like the trendy new thing. I just don't know if we have the shooters for that, which is why people, and you hear Tommy screaming at every single game, drive to the rim, you know, because we want to get those, you know, and it's hard for us as Celtics fans because we've been kind of burnt by the referees, you know, throughout history, so we don't trust that we're going to get the calls. And I think early in this game, we kind of saw, you know, a little bit of that, you know, scrappy, you know, kind of, yeah, just a little bit. But we ended up, you know, we shot 24 of them, and we made 23. You hit 23 of 24 free throws and only give up 5 turnovers, you're going to win a lot of games. And on top of that, the one thing that I think that everybody can agree on, you know, Doc got us a ring, yes, but Brad Stevens, he doesn't play that everybody run back, forget about the offensive. He tells everybody, get the rebounds, and if you look at the box scores, we out-rebound teams. Even teams where their big men might, you know, destroy us, we're still as a team out-rebounding other teams, and that's a significant change over seasons past where we just didn't commit to rebounds as much. And I think that contributes to the you know, the overall, obviously contributes to the overall success of this team. Those fundamentals that don't pop out at you, but when you look at them, you know, closely, the low turnovers, hitting all your free throws, out-rebounding the other team, you know, all those things. And then you have your role players stepping up when your main guys like Jay Crowder have, you know, a not-so-great shooting night.
Mm-hmm.
You have, you know, other players that are able to come in and step in. Oh, by the way, one last thing. Jordan Mickey, 4 minutes, and he got a block already. That's the guy. He changes shots. When people enter the paint, they change their mind, and you can see that. Just from the few minutes that he's got this season, they change their mind when Jordan Mickey is out there. He might be something that we can have to use in the middle there. If he can get a little bit of his offensive game going, he's definitely got something there, because for the rest of our team, they don't change their shots. When he's in the paint, they do. So I like to see the rookies get minutes in Geno time, but good win.
Great stuff as always, Nick. Appreciate the call and the support as always. So we'll catch you very soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Nick.
All right. Nick Sesento down in Tampa, bringing the hot takes. And he dialed 347-215-7771 on the SeatGeek toll-free call lines. That's a tongue twister, Corey, but I'm going to get it tonight.
That is. That is a tough one.
The call lines are powered by SeatGeek.com. I'm being frustrated by doing this read, but have you ever been frustrated by trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated, and they're all trying to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. The Celtics postgame show listeners, so if you're listening right now, you can get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase And to get your $20 rebate on tickets, what you need to do is download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, enter the promo code CelticsBeat. That's one word, CelticsBeat. SeatGeek will send you $20 off after you've made your first ticket purchase, and you can download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code CelticsBeat, one word, today. You can go to SeatGeek.com or wherever you download your apps, whether that's on Android or iPhone. So again, 347-215-7771, the SeatGeek toll-free call lines. Don't forget to press 1 if you want to come on the air with Corey and I tonight as we continue to break this one down. But Corey, getting back to what Nick was talking about with the rebounding, 57-48, the rebounding advantage for the Celtics tonight. And I think he brings up a good point, so I want to get your take on it as well. I think, you know, he brings up the point that back in the Doc Rivers era, you know, that rebounding stat was not necessarily one that they harped on. But Brad Stevens, you know, it's important to him. And, you know, obviously you got guys like Sully and Smart with 11 rebounds each. So there's 22 right there. But you get contributions from Zeller in his 24 minutes, 7 rebounds. Jarebko had 6 rebounds in his 19 minutes. Crowder had 6 rebounds, even though, like Nick said, he kind of struggled tonight. So you're getting contributions in the rebounding department from all these guys as well. And that's getting you, you know, to my next point, that's getting you transition baskets, fast break baskets. The Celtics tonight outscored the Blazers 30-11 in fast break points, much, you know, with the advantage of getting all of those rebounds and getting out and in scoring. So your thoughts on what the Celtics have been able to do in the rebounding category, and particularly tonight, able to turn that into fast break points and, you know, leading them to this big victory tonight.
Yeah, but I mean, rebounding is going to be key, especially when you get towards the playoff time, because face it, the Celtics' best lineup features Jay Crowder as the small ball power forward, pretty much. So you have a guy like Isaiah Thomas, who's obviously a liability on the defensive end and rebounding. Marcus Smart's a bulldog who can fight his way in there, but he's only about 6'4". Avery Bradley's around the same height as Marcus Smart. And then you pair those three plus Crowder with either Sullinger or Amir Johnson, depending on who's playing. It's probably going to be Sullinger. And you really just got to have a defensive effort, a team effort on the defensive glass. I mean, on the season right now, the Celtics ranked 25th defensive rebound percentage. So it's not good. Definitely needs room for improvement. And that's really what spurs on the fast break. Getting transition points, rebounding the ball effectively, and obviously forcing turnovers. So that's going to be key. But then off of what you said regarding the offensive rebounds, that was definitely something that Doc didn't like to do. I think a lot of that was based off of personnel, having a slower team, having, you know, guys like Pierce, Garnett, Ray Allen, who really just they needed to get back or else they were going to get burned in transition. So I think that was a lot of personnel based. And the way the league is going, a lot of teams have started electing not to go for offensive rebounds as much as they would have liked to or as much as they used to, just basically wanting to get back in transition. Mm-hmm. And when you do it against teams like Golden State or OKC, you really need to get back or else you're going to get burned. And you know, those Steph Curry threes can really swing games and you know, win games, obviously.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Corey. You know, obviously personnel is going to play a lot into it. I think with the speed that you have with some of the guys and you know, even some of the role players that the Celtics have, they're able to get out on the break and not worry so much about, you know, on the offensive glass. You know, having to get back if they don't get the rebound, to be able to get back into their, you know, into their defensive sets. So, you know, that's definitely a key point there. You mentioned, you know, turnovers as well in causing turnovers. They caused 14 tonight. The Celtics only committed 5 turnovers tonight. They really took care of the ball. And I know in games that I've covered on here and, you know, a lot of the games that I've watched, that when they've been able to keep control of the ball, they typically are in the game for the most part. I don't think there's been too many games where they've been able to take care of the ball and they didn't win. So I think that's a huge glaring stat that jumps out at me, that they only have five turnovers in this game. So they're really taking good care of the ball. One of the things you typically see once in a while, Isaiah Thomas gets a little bit out of control and loses the dribble, or, you know, the ball bounces off his foot or something like that. You may see that a couple times when he's trying to penetrate. Maybe Sully on an outlet pass, has a little bit of a lapse and throws that out of bounds. You know, those kind of mistakes weren't happening tonight that I saw. Obviously, they kept the turnovers to a minimum. What did you see specifically tonight, but maybe overall in some of the games where they've had lower turnovers, that's causing them to be able to take care of the ball so well and really lead to good possessions for them?
I think a lot of it has to do with how quick they are, how shifty they are. Guys like Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart, they're not typical point guards, and you can even make the statement that they're not point guards at all, but they do have point guard skills. And then you play those guys with a guy like Isaiah Thomas, who's been great at keeping his turnovers down. I believe he's one of the best as far as turnovers to assists go in the NBA this season. You pair him with a guy like that, and they're just a crisp passing team. I think Brad Stevens has really made them focus on keeping the turnovers down, making the smart play over the home run play. And that's when they're really at their best, more specifically on the offensive end of things, when they're moving the ball around, finding cutters. I don't know how many times we're going to see Jay Crowder cut into the lane.
Oh, man. I love it.
Surprise. Now it's just like it's normal now, him running through the lane, getting layups. So they have everything clicking on the offensive end, and it seems like it's not – I wouldn't say it's coming easy to them, but they really just know how to play off each other now, as opposed to earlier in the season when they're really just figuring things out and kind of going game by game.
Yeah, and you even have big men on this team, that are passing like guards out there. You know, obviously Olenek, is sort of a big point guard because he played it when he was younger, and you see him out there, the passes that he makes. You know, he's been missed a little bit, but the Celtics have been able to hold their own in his absence. But even a guy like Sullinger, some of the passes that I see him make sometimes, I'm very impressed with that. I remember one that he did Monday night, and I believe it was Zeller that he was on the high post, and Zeller was cutting through the paint, and he went low and around the defender, and just a bounce pass that, and Zeller didn't even catch it. It was such a good pass that he wasn't able to catch it cleanly and miss the layup. But just the pass that Sully made, I was very impressed with. And they have that. Zeller's a decent passer. Sully, Olenek, these guys can get the ball from the high post down to these guys that are back cutting. And obviously we've seen Bradley do that a lot. You mentioned Crowder. So they're getting themselves easy hoops that way. And that's really obviously getting the crowd into the game when you're at home, when you're making great passes like that. So, I'm really impressed with how they've been able to take care of the ball. Even going back to last week with that pass over the shoulder that Thomas made to Crowder in the corner, I still don't know how he got it. Never mind that he got it to Crowder, Corey, that he got it to Crowder in rhythm for him to shoot that three without even moving, basically. He was in rhythm. He was right into the shot and drained it. These are the kinds of things that are going to go a long way when you're making a playoff push like this.
Yeah, no, that pass was something else. I had no idea who he was passing to at the time, but obviously he knew from the get-go that Crowder was in the corner, and he saw him out of the corner of his eye, or just from the memory of him being there from before. But yeah, the turnovers are really impressive, especially when you like take into effect the amount of the pace the Celtics play with, the fact that they're pushing it all the time. They actually lead the league in field goal attempts per game, which is something I know that Brad Stevens really wanted them to do this year, was really just get a lot of shots up. So considering the amount of offensive possessions they have and how much they're really putting forth on that end of things, I think keeping the turnovers down has really been like a sort of an undervalued or an unsung stat this year for their success.
Yeah, I mean, believe me, there's been games that I've seen where they're, you know, getting 15, 20 turnovers a game and still able to win. But when you're under 10 and you're, you know, causing 14 turnovers on the other side and, you know, obviously getting points off those turnovers and, you know, getting out on the fast break and scoring, you know, quite often, a 30-11 differential in fast break points against a Blazers team that, you know, that can get out and run too. Although, you know, we saw they were pretty dead tired after that first quarter. They wore themselves out there. But, you know, the way the Celtics are playing right now, you know, and I want to get into this a little bit with you as well, talk about, you know, since I haven't been on the post game with you and haven't had this conversation with you, you know, the trade deadline came and went. They didn't make any moves. Now we're hearing, you know, rumors come out of the woodwork that they were going after Jimmy Butler and Paul George and, you know, and who are there was a couple of other guys that they were rumored to be going after. I mean, obviously we heard the Kevin the Love for a little while, and the Okafor one kind of came out. Yeah. Jahlil Okafor one kind of came out of nowhere. Now, you know, I was kind of playing both sides of it, saying, okay, you look at the Eastern Conference, it's a weaker conference. You're as close to the second seed as you are to the ninth seed, you know, sitting in that 3-4 spot that they have been in the last couple of weeks. And now, obviously, they're in the third spot ahead of Miami. You know, the other teams that are around them didn't necessarily do anything at the trade deadline that gives anyone a significant advantage over Boston or Miami or Atlanta. You know, the teams that are right there in that middle part. So the Celtics stand pat, and they still are in a very good position, maybe even to move up, depending, you know, obviously they have games against Toronto. Toronto's been playing excellent basketball this season, and, you know, have sort of solidified that number two spot, but there's always a possibility that that gap can be, you know, breached a little bit. Do you think that that Danny Ainge, you know, made the right move by sitting pat and not, you know, not overextending himself to offer that number one pick? And you know, do the Celtics have a chance to make a little bit of a run here in the playoffs because of it? What are your thoughts on you know, what happened at the trade deadline and where the Celtics sit now with their team intact?
Yeah, well, one thing, you know, Danny's looking around. He's stepping around for trades. I mean, he was pretty much rumored to be in every trade during the deadline. Yeah. So I don't think it was from a lack of effort on his part. But then again, you're not just going to sell off this Brooklyn pick this year, even though it's not looking as good as it might have had a month or two ago with Phoenix stinking up the joint. But it's still going to be in the top five. It's still a highly valued pick. And if you're not getting a piece, a young piece that you have locked up that you can bring in here and kind of develop within Brad Stevens' system, if you don't have that luxury, say for like an Al Horford, who you only have him for 25, 30 games, and then mm-hmm. the playoffs, and then he could really just pick up and leave, and you could be left without that Brooklyn pick, and you could be left with your other picks, which are good picks, but they're not the ones that other teams are really desiring right now and really want to trade for or trade with. So I think Danny made the right decision. I really think Brad Stevens, he wouldn't say anything to Danny Ainge about keeping this roster intact, but I think he secretly wanted to keep this team as it is, just to see how they could improve upon last season's first round playoff exit. And really, the East is wide open. Mm-hmm. Cleveland's not a sure thing anymore. Toronto's really been playing good ball, like you said, but they haven't gotten out of the first round in the last couple of years. There's a lot of pressure up there. And outside of those two, I'm not really afraid of anyone in the East. So the Celtics have a great chance to kind of sneak their way through, and if they end up in the conference finals, I think that's a really successful season.
Do you think that the pick, the Brooklyn pick in particular, has more value during, you know, before a trade deadline, or you know, will it still hold the same value in the offseason when we're getting down to the draft and, you know, Danny's looking to build the roster towards, you know, towards being a championship contender next year? Because you think that at this point, you know, next year and probably the you know, the 2017, 2018 season, they're going to be looking to compete for a championship. So does it hold more value, you know, in that draft period where they're looking to make moves to get, you know, a top quality player in a trade or via free agency to be able to utilize that pick to do that? Or, you know, do you think that the possibility that the value was never higher than it was prior to the trade deadline?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I do think that there is a sort of a stability when the draft hits, because you just really know where everyone is. Everyone's contract is kind of set, or there's free agency still left out there, but the draft picks are all set, and teams are able to kind of gauge where their teams are at as far as going into the next season, their draft capital, their finances, and their payroll. So I do think it's easier to pull off trades. You're not really under the gun. There's a reason it's called a deadline. You know, it's 3:00 Eastern time standard on Thursday. So if you're rushed, and it didn't seem like other teams were really engaging in this trade deadline as a whole. I mean, it was really a quiet trade deadline as opposed to last season's, where it was pretty entertaining. I think you're better off waiting and seeing where the Brooklyn pick lands, seeing how the rest of your team plays out. There's going to be a lot of interest going forward as far as prospective players buying in or looking into what Brad Stevens has to say. There was that recent thing that came out about Isaiah Thomas telling other guys about how good Brad Stevens is, and you really just gotta see him, you gotta play for him. So I really do think the Celtics, they have the chips, they have the assets. You don't want to cash in too early, and you don't want to shoot your load. You don't want to just buy in on somebody who's not going to be around in a year, or somebody who's a terrible fit. I really think they made the right decision.
Yeah, I can agree with that, Corey. And you know, obviously the point that you make about knowing where the pick is going to be, you know, whether that Nets pick sits at a 4 or 5 or, you know, God willing, it's a 2 or a 1, you know, and people kind of have a more stability going into that to know what, you know, what they could do as far as, you know, as far as salaries are concerned and payroll and everything like that. So that's a good point there. You know, I'm still interested to see what the end game is with Danny Ainge. I've said this many times, and I think some of the reports that came out around the trade deadline alluded to what Danny Ainge is thinking about, at least. I mean, he was keeping his cards very close to the vest for a long time, I think, in you know, not explaining what his end goal was. Obviously, he can't say, okay, I'm looking to go after Paul George or Jimmy Butler. He can't say that. But, you know, I think we kind of got an idea of what he's looking for as far as the piece that this team needs to go to the next level, which is encouraging to me because, you know, unless you were going after Kevin Durant, I didn't see what Danny Ainge's plan was as far as having all these assets, having 3 first-round picks, being able to swap the Brooklyn pick next year as well. You basically have, 8 or 9 picks in the next two drafts. Mm-hmm. You know, you can only hold on to those assets for so long. So it had been frustrating for me personally watching what was going on and saying, okay, Danny, what's in your head? Who are you looking to get? If it's not Kevin Durant, then who else is out there? So we kind of got an inkling of what he was looking at. If he's, you know, trying to make a deal for a Paul George caliber player, for a Jimmy Butler caliber player that can come here and make huge impact right away. And, you know, maybe you have to take a couple of integral pieces off this roster to make a deal like that work. So maybe the dynamic is a little bit different. But if you have a scorer like Jimmy Butler or Paul George and add to some of the assets that you have on this team, on this roster now you're talking. You know, you add a couple of pieces from the draft and, you know, maybe sign a free agent to help round out your role players. And then you're in competition for, you know, getting out of the East even. So, you know, I'm really starting to see that come together a little bit more than I did before the draft, which is encouraging to me with this whole rebuilding plan that the Celtics have been in since the trade with Brooklyn.
Yeah, that is going to be the the microscope is going to be under Danny Ainge as soon as the season ends, because he is going to have to make a trade. Just logistically and roster-wise, he's going to have to make a trade of some sorts. And I don't know who it's going to be, what draft picks it's going to be, but he might have to sell off his pieces at a discounted rate, considering that every other team in the NBA knows he has too many picks and he needs to make trades. I guess that's the one downside about waiting past this this deadline, as far as making a trade, is, you know, he puts him under the gun and kind of forces him into a trade. But at the other end of the spectrum, it kind of allows the guys on this roster to improve, and we're seeing that on a nightly basis. These guys are heads above where they were last season. I mean, a guy like Jay Crowder is becoming a wing scorer, where he came into Boston last season, he didn't know how to shoot three-pointers. Jared Solinger continues to show that when effective or when used and when on the court, he's a really good player, double-double. You know, obviously Avery Bradley has really improved his shot-making. Isaiah Thomas has gone from a six-man scorer to an all-around complete point guard. And then have a guy like Marcus Smart, who really he's already a first-team all-defensive kind of guy. He adds a shot to his game. He's going to be a really good player for a long time. So it really adds the availability of these guys to improve upon their game and kind of up their trade level.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about Jay Crowder, and you know, I know I've said this before, but he's fastly becoming one of my favorite Celtics right now with how he plays the game and what he brings to the table. You know, the expectations for him when he came here in that Rondo trade were so low. He was kind of almost an afterthought, a throw-in deal, you know, kind of the Mike Lowell to the, you know, to the Josh Beckett deal kind of thing, where, you know, nobody made too much of a big deal about it. But right away, he made an impact, and it was defensively. But slowly but surely, he's becoming an offensive threat and a go-to guy. You know, like I said, I was at the game Monday night, and he made one of the biggest shots that that he could possibly make at the end of that game. You know, Utah was in control of that game for the first half and even some of the third quarter before the Celtics got back into it. And, you know, he's hitting those big shots, hitting the big threes. The corner three that he hit, you know, off that pass from Thomas last week, we talked about. You know, I just love that lunch pail mentality, that blue-collar mentality. And, you know, he keeps bringing that to the table. So keeping him in the mix with this team long-term, obviously I know he's got a longer-term contract, but there was talk about depending on who you're going after at a trade deadline, you know, that a piece like that might need to be moved to make it work. But I think he is becoming, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears of the Celtics for the past, you know, season and a half or two seasons, and you need to keep guys like that on the you know, in the mix. And you know, obviously with Thomas and what he's done, you know, he moves to the starting lineup from that six man role and he's thriving. And it was obviously the you know, Brad Stevens pulling the purse strings and making that move. And, you know, I'm sure he doesn't regret it, because look at what you're getting out of Isaiah Thomas. And then Marcus Smart comes back from his injury and his contributions have continued to grow and impress. So, you know, I mean, I said this the last time I hosted the post-game show, Corey, and I'm going to say it again. If you're not on the Celtics bandwagon, you better hurry up, because there's not going to be room for you.
Yeah, they don't need to get on, actually. I don't mind it. I like keeping it where it's at, keeping the real fans alive and rooting for this team. There's been a couple of tweets about that just came up, just about how the Celtics still aren't respected somehow this season, because they don't have the name guys, they don't have the superstar players on their team right now. And I think that's kind of a good thing, that disrespect. It really just puts that collective chip on everyone's shoulder and helps them strive even more in becoming a really, really well-rounded team, which is what they're becoming. Make no mistake about it. The Celtics are going to be tough outs in the playoffs, and they're going to really contend. I think they can get the Eastern Conference Finals, and we'll see after that. But they're really, really likable team. they get after every night, and that's not something you can say for every
yeah.
NBA team.
They're in every game.
NBA player.
They're in every game.
They never give up.
Yeah, love it. Yeah.
But
well,
it'll be interesting to see how Danny Ainge treats Jay Crowder, because I think Jay Crowder is actually, as of this moment, the team's best trade asset on the roster.
That's what I mean.
It's tough with that. So we'll see what he does with Jay Crowder.
Well, getting back to some talk about this game tonight, we're going to go to our locker room reporter, Jared Weiss, down at the TD Garden to bring us the Grandstand Celtics Locker Room Report. Grandstand sports highlights from fans in the stands on the new sports app, Grandstand. You could share your own Celtics highlights and watch other fans' videos straight from the crowd. Download Grandstand on the App Store or at grandstand.me. Jared Weiss from the TD Garden, welcome to the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show tonight. What's up, Jay Weiss?
You guys were talking about Jay Crowder like he was about to get traded. I guess once I heard that out of context. So that guy, I'm not going anywhere unless it's bringing back some sort of incredible player in return.
Yeah, he could be the team's best trade asset, though, right? At least right now.
Of course, yeah. He's a trade asset for maybe Anthony Davis right now. But
and I think that was the context that we were speaking of trading Jay Crowder in. I was giving him more like that lunch pail, diving on the floor, doing all the little intangibles to help this team go as far as they possibly can in the playoffs. I was in the building Monday night when he hit that three, Jared, and obviously he's hit some multiple big shots from out there recently. Talk about your feelings on Jay Crowder on the court, what he's been able to contribute to this team.
I mean, I've been gushing over this guy for the better part of a year now, and there was something that offended me the other day that my co-host Jimmy Toscano said on our show on the Garden Report. But he said that he said in the podcast we recorded today that will be released tomorrow on the WEI Celtics podcast, powered by CLNS Radio. I had to get myself promo out of the way. he said that when the Rondo trade happened, that everybody was like, who is this Jay Crowder guy? I was not one of those people. I was one of those people that went,
no,
wow, look at that Jay Crowder.
I remember.
He's a really solid role player. I didn't think he would be this good. I thought maybe, 5 years, when he's in his late 20s, he might be a semblance of this current player, or maybe more like the player that kind of played last year. But he has, this is what makes a great player, or a really good player, I won't call him great, is you're someone that adds something to your game every year, and you grow during the season. And Crowder came out this year, and he had better shooting mechanics than he had last year. Poor phrasing, but you know what I'm trying to say. And he just had a better demeanor about himself with the ball coming into the season. As the season has gone on, he has developed such better driving ability, his patience with the ball, his ability to read defenders attacking him at angles and make, hesitation moves, make up fakes, stuff like that. He has developed a really nice, well-rounded offensive game. And the way he's playing now reminds me a lot of how Jimmy Butler looked in this, I want to say, third year, as he was really starting to turn a corner as a really good player. That Butler was a lot earlier in his career at that point. And I don't see Crowder being quite as dynamic with the ball as Butler is. But I think, and Butler, who's a really good defender, Crowder plays at maybe even a little bit higher level of defense. He's one of the elite defenders in the NBA. Crowder has been, he has excelled in every area that I thought he would be good at. And he is really one of the most valuable players in the NBA right now. He's not going to crack the top 10 on the MVP votes, but he's an incredibly valuable player. I mean, you factor in the fact that he is now locked in at what is going to be less than the mid-level exception this year for really one of the probably 25 most valuable players in the NBA this year. That's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and he really plays like that Grizzly veteran, and he's still very young, so. I think the potential for him, like you said, to keep improving year after year, that I want to see him in Celtics green to be able to do that. And all of this love for Jay Crowder, that's why you call him Bay Crowder, right?
That's right.
Corey, something for Jared?
Yeah. Well, back to this game. I mean, I don't think the final score was totally indicative of how the game went. I mean, the first quarter, Lillard was really catching fire early. It seemed like it was going to be a tightly contested game. Marcus Smart comes in. he immediately starts going after rebounds with full force. Do you think he kind of changed the game with the energy he brought in?
Yeah, and that was the theme coming from a lot of guys tonight was, hey, our bench provides a ton of energy, and that's what makes the Celtics good. And I think Avery Bradley really harped on this about how he was asked a really weird question of, like, is it important to show the other team that your bench players are as important as your starters? And I think Bradley kind of was like, what the hell is this question? And then he answered it with saying that, yeah, like, every single guy on this team is really important. That every guy is fitting into the puzzle so perfectly right now. And we keep seeing this where the Celtics second unit comes out, and they just, like, kind of barnstorm the opposing team where they're running all over them. Smart is forcing turnover. You know, Smart and Jay Crowder have mastered the art of getting the ball, stealing the ball at the top of the key, and then just exploding in the transition. They're so good at it, whether they're pickpocketing or whether they're smacking it backwards towards their own hoop because there's another Celtics player there. That Celtics player will pick it up. The guy with the original steal flies down the court, and they toss them a leading outlet pass, and they score against the line. It works, like, every time. And the Celtics make that play, like, five times a game, and that's why they're so good. And if they didn't make those plays, they would not be winning. They would be a below 500 team. But they make those plays over and over and over again, no matter who the opponent is, whether they're playing a really slow team or they're playing a really fast team. You know, tonight they took 107 field goals. I think it's the fifth time. I want to say it's the fourth or fifth time that they've crossed the 105 field goal attempt threshold. That's a ton of shots. That's an incredible pace.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when they play at that pace, they're really hard to stop.
They only had 23 after the first quarter. So they had 80 in the last three quarters, but 80-plus in the last three quarters, basically. That's a crazy amount of shots. Now, Jared, I had alluded to this earlier. I mentioned that you had tweeted out about Isaiah Thomas really working on that right hand, and obviously it seemed to be working for him tonight, and Portland wasn't ready for it to the tune of 30 points. What did you see from Isaiah that was really working tonight and allowing him to really score at will in his 11 for 20 shooting night?
I mean, you can put a lot of analysis into it, but really he hit like four unbelievable floaters in the first half. Where, like, he would drive a guy. Like,
one of them that hit the ceiling.
Finger roll that would like go over the shot clock and fall back in. I mean, he hit some pretty amazing shots. I mean, Isaiah has completely mastered the art of using your body to protect your shot in the paint. He's as good. He's one of the best in recent, and at least in my lifetime, at doing it. You know, Iverson obviously is probably the master of it. There's a few other guys, but for guards that get in the paint, and Chris Paul obviously deserves mention. But guys that can get in the paint and use their body to protect themselves against bigger guys and get the shot off, Isaiah is definitely in the elite, all-time elite level at that. You know, there's obviously a lot more things in the game. He's not one of the all-time greats yet. But what I liked about Isaiah tonight is using that right hand. So I know I've asked this in the past, and I don't remember if it was me that asked the question on this quote, but he was asked, like, what's the thing that you still need to improve on? And something that I've been saying for a while that I was really surprised he admitted was, I don't have a right hand. And people have been giving me crap for a while now for saying he doesn't use his right hand. But if you watch him every single game, like I do, he never uses his right hand. When it's like an obvious right-handed layup situation, he'll twist his body around, use like the index finger and the thumb of his left hand to get the shot off. And tonight, he was like, you know what? I guess I don't know what he was thinking. I didn't get a chance to ask him this tonight. I'll have to ask him next game. But he had a drive where he used his left shoulder to ward off the defender and then reach out with his right hand and use the right side of the rim for the layup. And it was a much easier play than whatever else he was going to try if he used his left hand. It was a smart basketball play. You know, I think Isaiah Thomas has earned the right to not be ambidextrous at this point. Like, he's been pretty good without it. But it really allows you to draw more fouls more frequently and to convert more on your three-point plays. Then again, he's already one of the best in the league at that, so it's not like he needs significant help there.
Now, do you think there's still a lack of respect? I saw some tweets out there about Isaiah being asked about a chip on his shoulder. I think you tweeted something out about that. Do you think there's still a lack of respect for this team? Does it bother them?
I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I tweeted that out while we were talking just now. so I'm gonna read these quotes here from Isaiah. He was asked, was this a chip on the shoulder game for you going against Damian Lillard? He said, you can say that. Every game is like that for us, honestly. It just happened to be today against two of the best guards in the NBA at the tandem. Like I said, I keep saying it, but as a group, we did a great job of just containing them and making them work. And then he was asked, so every game is a chip on the shoulder game for you, huh? And he said, teams, players, the NBA, they still don't respect us, and we know that. We go into every game with a chip on our shoulder, knowing that we have to earn the respect, that we have to earn what we get and take what's ours. And we feel like every game we've got a chance to win. If we play the right brand of basketball, we've got to just keep it going these last 20 games of the season. So, yeah.
So it sounds like they'd rather have teams doubt them and not show them the respect so they can keep that chip on their shoulder and play like they played tonight. They shut those guys down after the first quarter. I mean, McCollum didn't hit a shot after the first quarter. He hit his first five shots, and then he missed the eight after that. I mean, the defense, they swarmed him, they shut him down, two of the best guards in the league right now, and they absolutely did nothing after the first quarter. And I thought it was a phenomenal performance by the backcourt of the Celtics tonight.
You know, Stevens he made it very clear that that the whole it's a 4-game, 5-night thing for the Blazers, so obviously they ran out of gas here. He made it clear that in the NBA, they've had all sorts of instances where those assumed facts turned out not to be true, where teams that should have been gassed ran them out of the building. When they had a huge amount of time off before a game, they came out flat. So Steven says that wasn't the case tonight, but it kind of seemed like the case a little bit tonight. I mean, they played really well in the first quarter. And then once Marcus kind of ran them out of the building in the second quarter, it wasn't it wasn't like a blowout game at halftime. It was a big lead, but it wasn't like an absolute devastating game at halftime.
It was a 6-point game at halftime.
In the third quarter, Solinger just took over, and they had no response. McCollum couldn't hit a shot. Lillard had a pretty solid game. And I mean, Isaiah's 30 points in 30 minutes overshadowed Lillard's performance. So Lillard was solid. But they just were kind of flat tonight. And actually, one more thing I even missed this one was Brad Stevens on Isaiah Thomas outplaying Damian Lillard. The thing I respect the most out of Isaiah is he's got a chip on the shoulder no matter who he's playing against. There's that chip. It's there. It's everywhere. These guys love Doritos.
Jared, you mentioned that. Go ahead. Oh,
sorry.
Matchup for Portland? I mean, they get most of their scoring from McCollum and Lillard. A lot of their secondary scoring comes off of pick and rolls and transition points. And Celtics, obviously one of the Celtics' strengths is their backcourt defense. Do you think, going off the fact that Lillard was going to have to go up against guys like Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart, it was a tough matchup for them?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough matchup, but it's I think you look at it as from the other side that while Portland is going up against a team that kind of relies on its guards to make big plays, they're thinking, well, our guards are good enough that they can still dominate against these guys. Because, when the Knicks come to town, or that's a bad example, but, when teams come to town and they have mediocre guards, so, we're in trouble because their guards are going to swallow up our guards and we're going to be playing 3-on-5 the entire night. So I think that I look at this matchup as the Blazers have the firepower to go up against the Celtics' firepower, and it's a question of whether guys like Noah Vonleh can make important plays, which didn't really happen, or whether Myers Leonard can make important plays, which didn't really happen. And that is what it comes down to. But I mean, if I'm a team going up against the Celtics, I want to be a team that has some great guards and a good big man, because I want my guards to be able to still be impactful on the games. So you're going to need guys that are good enough to still score a Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley.
Jared, you were talking about Sully earlier, and obviously he was a beast tonight on the boards and in the paint. I talked a lot about earlier in his career, the inconsistency and obviously the injuries, not being able to stay on the court, but he's been fairly healthy. He's becoming much more consistent. Nights where he's going 15 and 11, Celtics fans will take that every single night out of Sully, and he's starting to really round out. As long as he stays away from shooting the threes, more towards the player that we expected him to be. What are you seeing from Jared lately, besides the fact that he loves to mess with the sideline reporters with towels and whatnot, seeing him on the court that's leading him to have this success recently?
I didn't see it. Did he throw anything at Scal while Scal was doing sideline duty earlier this week?
I believe he did. No, I believe he did. One of the games last week, I believe it was the Heat game. On Saturday afternoon, he did something, but I didn't see anything since. But it's funny how I did see him Monday night. He was it was before the game, so I don't think they were on camera, but he was hugging it up with Tommy and Gorman before the game. So he definitely likes to hang around those guys.
Yeah, I did see him give a wet willy to a reporter in the locker room too on his way out. I mean, that's your insulter for you. I think he's been playing well enough over the last month. Obviously, he has to continue this, but he's getting back playing as the kind of player that they think that they are expecting him to be, which isn't like his maxed out poor man's Kevin Love kind of player that they're going for. But he's been playing, I think, more like a glorified Tristan Thompson lately. He's not as good of a rebounder as Tristan Thompson, but he's kind of playing a lot of that role where he's dominating the glass. He's making some good mid-range plays. He's making some good high post plays. A big thing has been that he admitted that he's not good at shooting the three ball. And then he said, I'm going to step in and I'm good from stepping in. And then he stepped in and he started taking long twos. And ever since then, he's been playing, I feel like, mostly in the post, and he hasn't been taking that many threes. So it's kind of weird that kind of quietly changed. And then all of a sudden he's playing a lot better. So I guess it's kind of the old standard that when you see the ball going through the hoop, that's what really motivates you and makes you play well. And it's been really helping him. But his play around the hoop has been really good. And maybe Stevens has decided that he's just going to have Solinger just go to what really works best for him and not try to force him to fit the model, especially because Kelly Olynyk has been so good as a stretch big this year that they didn't really need to force Solinger to be that guy. They obviously want him to be that guy. But with Kelly Olynyk's play and Jonas Rebko's play, it frees up Solinger to kind of play more to his strengths.
Well, Jared, we know you got to head off and record the Garden Report, which we will all be tuning into as soon as it's up on our YouTube channel in the morning. But who you got with you tonight, and what are you going to be talking about?
We got the kid, Jimmy Toscano, from Comcast Sportsnet.
Oh, awesome.
Per usual, episode. He was on Monday night, and we did a podcast before the game, and now we're going to talk again tonight. So lots of Jimmy talk in my life, which makes my life better, of course.
The romance continues.
We'll talk about that chip on his shoulder. We'll talk about Solinger's performance. And looking at the team as a whole as they go into the gauntlet of March, can they come out the other side as a 50-win team? We'll find out.
All right, sounds great. Jared Weiss from the locker room of TD Garden, thank you so much for joining us as always, and we'll look forward to catching you next time on the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show.
Peace out, boys.
Thanks, Jared.
All right. Jared Weiss, don't forget to follow Jared on Twitter at CLNS_Jared Weiss. And, of course, go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/CLNS Radio, for high-definition locker room interviews, full-length locker room interviews, and, of course, as I said, the Garden Report, our HD post-game show shot on the parquet floor at TD Garden. Tonight's Garden Report will be with Jared Weiss and Jimmy Toscano. So you can subscribe today, youtube.com/CLNS Radio. All right, Corey, we've had a great show tonight. Had Nick Cicento calling in with some great points. The call lines are still open. The SeatGeek call lines at 347-215-7771. We'll stay open if anyone wants to jump in with their thoughts on this game tonight. But we've broken this one down pretty good. Now, looking forward over the next week or so, the Celtics, you know, the games don't get any easier. You get a big matchup at home against the Knicks on Friday night. Now, the Knicks' record is 25-37. They've been playing the Celtics pretty tough this season in the matchups that they've had so far. And then you got to go the next night to Cleveland to face the Cavaliers, who are going to be looking to exact some revenge from the game that Avery Bradley stole from them a few weeks ago. And then you have a little bit of a break there, a little bit of a breather before playing the Grizzlies back at home next Wednesday. So the Celtics can really, go all out in these next couple of games and try and obviously continue the winning streak at home Friday night. But it's going to be a tough matchup on Saturday. What are your thoughts on these two games in particular, and even the Grizzlies game, which isn't going to be easy, even though Marc Gasol is not there anymore. with his injury. But, you know, these next three games are going to be telling for the Celtics. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the Friday night game against New York, they really should win that one. New York's really, really been struggling. They actually got destroyed by the Trailblazers last night at the Garden.
Yeah.
It's high comedy for anyone who doesn't like the Knicks or any anti-New York people. Just a lot of finger-pointing. you know, Carmelo Anthony telling a fan to ask James Dolan for his money back. So you really got to beat the Knicks on Friday at home. And yeah. then that revenge game is going to be tough. You know, Cleveland's going to be geared up and ready. It's a Saturday night, too, so it's a back-to-back. That's going to be really difficult. But I think the Celtics' schedule isn't as hard as it may seem on the surface. These home games are a really nice break. And they're obviously, they're really starting to catch fire at home. 12 straight now. This is kind of what we're used to as Boston Celtics fans. Celtics really playing well at home, feeding off the crowd and getting out in transition. And, yeah, Memphis Grizzlies aren't the same without Gasol. And then that Friday game, March 11th, comes against the Houston Rockets team, which has kind of given up on the season all the way back when Kevin McHale was fired. So the Celtics have all the room to go on a run. That Cleveland game is going to be real tough, though.
Yeah. You mentioned the crowd at TD Garden, and I know I talked about this earlier, but Monday was the first game of the season that I've gone to at the Garden, and it was a playoff atmosphere there. It was a close game against Utah. Utah got off to a pretty good lead there, but the Celtics were right in it in that second half and were able to pull out a victory. But we were up. We were standing up and cheering every play. We were giving it to refs for making bad calls, and obviously the Jazz have a lot of talent with Haywood and some of the guys that they have out there. Shelvin Mack looked pretty good to me, in his game Monday night. But the Celtics pulled out almost a last second victory with that huge three by Crowder, and it was like being in a playoff game. In that place Monday night, and the way they're playing right now, every game in the Garden should be like that, and probably will be, since we're getting down to the nitty gritty here. I mean, we have a little less than a month and a half left in the season, and it's clear that they're going to be playing some bonus basketball in the playoffs. It was very, very exciting to be there. I took my son. We actually got upgraded to Section 5. So we got a little bit closer seats than we started with, and it was better than I could have imagined to go to that game and on a Monday night game to have the crowd be so amped up against the Utah Jazz, Western Conference opponent, so it's not really that rivalry kind of thing that you would see, they're playing a couple of Western Conference foes this week, but man, it was exciting to be in there. So for anyone who hasn't been to a game, try and get to one before the end of the season, or even get some playoff tickets, and you can go to SeatGeek and get them. So go to SeatGeek.com for that. But it was a lot of fun to go to the game on Monday. It was great that they pulled out the victory, but just being in the crowd, during a game like that was exciting.
That's important. I mean, the players feed off of that. I know we think of them as robots sometimes, but they're playing on a Monday night, coming back from, a previous game, and they're trying to get geared up for a Western Conference team, a team they don't really have any. There's no rivalry with the Jazz. It's never going to be a rivalry against the Utah Jazz. It's a team that needs a lift, and the Celtics got it that night, and they've been getting it throughout the season. It did seem like earlier this season the crowds were kind of sporadic as far as the noise level or the
even
level
Monday,
or whatever.
Even Monday, Corey, kind of started off a little slow. I think people were late arriving. But by that end of the first quarter, when the Celtics kind of kept it close, even though Utah was still leading, it started to get a little bit more exciting. When the second unit came in and really got them back into that game, Marcus Smart made a big impact. And then the place, from the second quarter to the end, the place was rocking. So, maybe some people were working late on Monday and didn't get into the arena until you know, probably halfway through the first quarter, but it started to get loud after that.
Yeah, and I think that the brand of basketball certainly helps too. The Celtics play a high velocity, out in transition, team defense, getting after it. You know, they bring in 10 guys that play pretty well, so they're really a fun team to watch. And yeah, I think that 7:30 start, even though it's 7:30, seems like enough. There's always late stragglers or people coming in, getting drinks or food, or just coming in from work kind of late. So those Monday night 7:30 games usually. Yeah, like you said, they kind of start off slow maybe, but towards the end when it gets real good. That Jazz game was a real, real good game.
I took my time. I got in there early, you know, went over to Halftime Pizza and got my Larry Bird sandwich. And my son had a couple of slices of pizza. And, you know, we strolled over there and got there in a good amount of time before the game started. And you know, got settled in our seats. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. So there was no rushing around. And, it, you know, it was a fun game to be at. So I'm definitely going to try to get to a couple more games before the end of the season here and hopefully get some playoff tickets as well, because, you know, it's a lot of fun when the Celtics are playing like this. And, you know, even last year, even the last couple of years, when obviously the result wasn't where we all would have liked it, the Brad Stevens era has brought an exciting brand of basketball. So, you know, they go to the playoffs last year. Okay, they go out in the first round, but it was still exciting. You know, the year before, they obviously they didn't do as well, but there were moments where we saw what they could be in the next couple of years, kind of what we're seeing now. You know, it's like you said, the brand of basketball has been exciting. And that's what we want to see from them every night. And you know, we fully expect that they're going to have their off nights, and they're going to, you know, lose a couple more games this season as they push towards 50. And, you know, it's going to be tough for them to get to that point. But if they keep playing like they did tonight, and like they did Monday night, and like they've played at home in the last, 12 games, you know, they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs, and they're going to surprise a lot of people. And hopefully earn that national respect that they're not getting from other teams, not getting from the media nationally. You know, although I said earlier when Jared was on the phone that they do feed off of that, and that's probably good that they're not getting that respect, because it's keeping that chip on their shoulder. But I think these guys are always going to have that. So I think that'll be good for them to kind of hang under the radar, if you will, and come in and surprise some people come playoff time.
Yeah, and I actually, going back to what you earlier said, I didn't know Halftime Pizza served sandwiches. I've only ever gotten pizza there.
They have a good, the whole right side of the menu is all sandwiches, and they're named after either a Bruins player or something related to the Bruins, or a Celtics player or something related to the Celtics. And the Larry Bird sandwich entails a nice toasted sub roll with some turkey in bacon and some lettuce and tomato. So it hits the spot, not too filling, but you know, just right there with a couple of adult beverages before the game, and get you primed and ready to go cheer on the Celtics.
Yeah, I do love their
pizza.
Their cheese pie,
I mean, obviously
it's
Halftime Pizza. Yeah, it's called Halftime Pizza, so the pizza is pretty good there too.
Yeah. Come playoff time, hopefully Halftime Pizza will be packed, and the Celtics will be going deep into the playoffs. They have the guys to do it. It helps that they have a deep team this year. They really played off each other well, and it keeps the minutes down too. I don't think that's been pointed out enough. It kind of keeps the minutes down for a lot of these guys. They should be fresh.
Yeah, exactly. And they have one of the stronger second units in the league right now. I mean, if you can bring in, you know, your Marcus Smarts and your Evan Turner's off the bench, and, you know, even Kelly Olynyk when he's healthy, and you know, Amir Johnson has been coming off the bench recently and had some, you know, some key moments, even though he's, you know, overall in the last month or month and a half or so, he might have struggled a little bit. But, you know, you got strong role players on this team that are contributing. They're making an impact. And, you know, I don't think I'm stretching the truth too much when I say they have one of the strongest benches in the league right now. And you look at their record over the last, you know, couple months. Obviously, they were 9-3 in February. Brad Stevens, congratulations to Brad Stevens. He gets Coach of the Month for the month of February. And that 9-3 record, they haven't had as good a record in February since 1986. Now, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist or anything, but we all know what happened the last time. The Celtics were at least 9-3 in February, and in 1986 they won the championship. So, I'm not going to start any talk about the Celtics winning the championship with a certain team out west that is likely going to go back to back. But it's a fun time to be a Celtics fan again, and a lot of people are eating crow with Brad Stevens and what he's brought to the table. And obviously, like we talked about earlier, no superstars on this team, just a bunch of guys that are playing well together and have gelled and really wanted to stay together at the deadline. I mean, that speaks volumes, Corey. There was talk, they wanted to keep that nucleus together to be able to go on a run, and they were able to do that. And I think Danny Ainge heard that, saw that, felt that, and kind of acted accordingly when he was accepting calls or making calls to other GMs, still wanting to improve the team, but thinking, we have a strong core here that can make some moves. So we'll try and add to that rather than subtract from it.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a roster full of guys that – maybe were entitled at one point in their careers, their AAU careers or their college careers, but once they became professionals, they really had to work hard to improve upon that. You can point anyone on the roster, and they've improved greatly once they've come into the NBA. And I know I've heard a lot of analysts, I think Scal has said that before, basically the most important thing, you become a professional in the NBA, and congratulations, you've made it. But at the same time, it just starts here. You have to keep working. And I know you remember when they drafted Avery Bradley. I mean, he really couldn't shoot the ball, and right now he's becoming a really above average 3-point shooter, a 3-point threat, if you will. And he's one of the many cases of guys who have really just stepped up their game and improved from day one since coming into the league.
Yeah, Avery Bradley, he's been, he's on a very, what we can see is a very affordable contract now. And, there were some inconsistencies with him as well. But, he's really rounded out his game quite a bit. I mean, the defense is always there. He's an elite perimeter defender. We know that. But he's really improved his game offensively as well. And if we could see guys like Marcus Smart continue to improve that, we talked about Jay Crowder improving his offense. You keep these guys together over the next couple of years and add to that, they're really going to have something, and it's really going to be exciting to watch. So we've talked enough tonight, Corey. We're going to ride off into the sunset for this one, wrap up a little bit early. But don't forget that the Celtics will be back in the TD Garden to look to push that winning streak to a lucky 13 games at TD Garden on Friday night against the New York Knicks. Of course, CLNS Radio will have you covered. LHR is going to have the pregame show. It'll be on clnsradio.com by 4 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. He will likely have a guest from the enemy, from the New York Knicks side, so stay tuned for who that will be. Because that'll be interesting to find out who LHR will bring on to that episode. But we will also have the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show immediately following that one as well. Jared Weiss will call in from the locker room. Patrick Gilroy and Rich Conte are scheduled to have you covered, but stay tuned in case that may change. But we'll be back to hopefully another victory that the Celtics push their winning streak at home a little bit further as they continue to move up into the Eastern Conference elite. Any final thoughts from you, Corey, before we wrap up tonight as the Celtics defeated the Portland Trailblazers in this one 116-93?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot to be said about this game. I think Portland was obviously tired coming off of a road trip. They're still in the middle of that road trip, and they played last night in New York, but don't discount the Celtics' effort tonight. The first quarter was highly contested, and it seemed like it was going to be a tight game. They came out and really just they smashed the Trailblazers in the mouth. Collectively, they played a lot of good defense, and they shut them down. And it was really a team effort tonight.
Don't forget to go to clnsradio.com as well and check out all the great work that Corey and the Celtics B team does in covering this team with the written word, in addition to all the great stuff that we're doing audio-visually as well. And why don't you give your Twitter handle that all the folks can follow you at as well, Corey.
Oh, yeah. It's Corey Prescott 7. Very simple.
Very simple. Very simple. Okay, great. All right. So, again, tune in Friday night. We'll be back after the Knicks game, and we will look forward to having you call into the SeatGeek toll-free call lines at 347-215-7771 after, hopefully, the Celtics beat the Knicks on Friday night. So for my co-host, Corey Prescott, this is Sean Backe. Thank you so much for listening to the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show. Good night.